Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros, it's Leave It In the Ring.
To the next round on the Leave It In The Ring radio network of David Duenes. I'm your co-host, Steve K9 Kim, and joined as always from the beautiful city of San Francisco, Golden Gate Gabe Montoya. Mr. Montoya, good Monday to you.
Good Monday to you, sir. How was your weekend?
Weekend was very productive, and now we look forward to a very busy stretch in the world of boxing. Couple of announcements we want to make, but first, if you want to call in, we will take your calls in about 15 to 20 minutes. The digits, 347-215-7598. Once again, 347-215-7598. If you want to tweet us a question or a comment, you can do so at SteveUCNLive or at Gabriel_Montoya. And ladies and gentlemen, we are very, very excited to bring a sponsor on because, quite frankly, we'd like to get paid for these efforts. Iron Gym. Call them at 818-322-4627. Once again, that's Iron Gym, located at 14548 Ventura Boulevard in Sherman Oaks, California. That number, once again, 818-322-4627. But let's get started with round number one. It was Showtime, their 2015 debut from the Palms Resort in Las Vegas, a doubleheader. And we have a new WBC featherweight titleist, Jerry Russell Jr., blows out defending champion Johnny Gonzalez in four rounds. Mr. Russell out of Washington, D.C., goes to 26-1. Gonzalez drops to 57-8. And in the opener, it was a close one, won by Jermell Charlo in a junior middleweight scrap, 10-round decision over Vonis Martirosyan. Your scores, 97-93, and two scores that read 96-94. Gabe, I thought it was very simple. Johnny Gonzalez historically has had some problems with southpaws, and I just thought that was a factor, along with the fact that simply he was out-quick and out-sped from the very beginning. And stylistically, this was just a very difficult matchup at the age of 33 for Gonzalez.
Yeah, he's going to be a very difficult matchup for a lot of people. But, you know, I think Gary, yeah, it's just everything went in his favor. I mean, I think I was looking at a little bit longer haul kind of fight. And in that case, even then, you know, I think Al Haymon, you know, was certainly going to be in Gary Russell's corner more than Johnny Gonzalez's corner, but it didn't matter. I mean, you know, Ernest Gabayon, who's been dealing with Gary's gloves for years and probably knows as much about, you know, what his quote-unquote hand problems were early on in his career and how that's changed. I remember interviewing Gary back when I was at Max Boxing, him talking about how early on he was getting injured a lot, but that, you know, he'd kind of grown into the pro game, similar to like the way a rookie gets a little bit dinged up as they're first making a go of it in the pros. It was a similar kind of thing with him here. And now he's past that, and it really showed. I mean, he's very explosive, looks super strong at the weight. I don't know if you caught this, you know, the lead into the fight, but Russell talked about the fact that he had a new strength coach for his fight against Vasyl Lomachenko, and he spent 3 days in a sauna feeling terrible, and yet the new strength coach didn't listen, and so he was listless in the fight. They kind of blamed it on that other than Lomachenko. But, you know, on this night, I don't know about that night, Gary Russell was the man.
Speaking of that issue, I know a lot of people are going to roll their eyes and say that's an excuse. I'll say this. The day or two after that fight last year, I know one of his cornermen who consistently works at Wild Card with their fighters, Rodrigo Mosquera. He told me off the record back then, leading into that fight, that's precisely what took place. And there was also an issue with the hand, specifically the left one. And I also believe coming into that fight, he was not very active. But you know what? Let's give Lomachenko credit. I think that it really shows you the type of skill level the Ukrainian has. As for Johnny Gonzalez, Gabe, I thought it was very interesting, the timing of it, that it was announced by Kevin Ioli that Golden Boy had filed suit, basically alleging a breach of contract and basically conspiracy to not live up to the contract last year when they tried to make this fight. And suddenly, all of a sudden, Al Haymon puts the green light on it after they leave the auspices of Golden Boy Promotions. We know how mental this game can be. Do you think that may have had any effect on the actual fight, or was it just really that bad of a matchup for him?
I think it was that bad of a matchup for him. He wasn't going to win this. I think Golden Boy, I would say the timing, and I haven't talked to anybody over there today, but the timing might be more about making sure that, you know, this fight actually did go down. They were at that 11th hour when the lawsuit came out. So the fight goes through and the lawsuit goes through. That way nobody really escapes it. All of a sudden no one gets an injury and this fight gets put off yet again. But it's interesting to see, you know, Golden Boy, will they step forward the way main event's going to step back once they got what they wanted? With Golden Boy, there's no way they're going to get what they want because the fight already took place. So it's going to be interesting to see what this further reveals about the machinations of one Al Haymon.
In regards to Gary Russell, Gabe, I've said it before, and I'll say it again, he's the most physically talented guy with the highest ceiling since the great Mark Too Sharp Johnson. But to reach that plateau and to be considered really an elite belt holder or real champion, you got to show consistency. So we're going to find out if he's matched up with Leo Santa Cruz and Abner Morris, because they are in Haymonville, if he is Mark Johnson or if he's more Eddie Hobson. And I think that'll be fascinating to see. Gabe, I posed this question on Twitter yesterday because we know about the alternate parallel universes that exist in boxing. Let's say Gary Russell wipes out Leo Santa Cruz. He takes care of business against Abner Morris. Vasyl Lomachenko or Nicholas Walters, they come out and handle their business. Is that what we're basically going to be stuck with? Two different sets of champions, or would there ever be a rematch or the possibility of a return match between Lomachenko and Russell? Because I don't want to hear fans say, well, the first fight was lopsided. What could we really learn in a rematch? Gabe, I've seen it time and time again, namely with Riddick Bowe and Evander Holyfield. The first fight doesn't necessarily almost always mean there's going to be a redo in the second go-around. I think if Gary Russell proves his point, starts mowing guys down, I'd like to see a better version of Gary Russell and see how he fares against the Lomachenko.
I'd like to see it again. Does Gary Russell want to see it again? Are they going to be content saying, it wasn't me, I'm better than that guy, and let me just go live in this other universe and prove that? Well, you know, I tend to think that's really what's going to happen. You can't maintain a universe if you don't have a certain amount of sign with us or else, as part of, the entrance fee to it. So I think that's more along the lines of where Al's at. And I think that's the way things are going to remain for the next 4 years.
Gabe, in the opening bout on Showtime from the Palms Resort in Las Vegas, Jermell Charlo ekes out a unanimous decision over Vonis Martirosyan. Gabe, I have no argument with this decision either way. I thought it was close. I thought both guys certainly won four rounds. The question then becomes who won five and six. I got the sense Martirosyan in the first half jumped off to a lead. Now, whether that was 4-1 or 3-2, that's a matter of interpretation. But, Gabe, it's a familiar pattern with Martirosyan at a certain level. He's good enough to compete, but he's just limited enough to lose. Gabe?
Oh, geez, sorry. I think that Vonis needed to know this more than anything else heading into this fight. He needed to understand that he can't leave things. No one cares that he's an Olympian. He doesn't have a title. He's not a draw. He's not a ratings draw. He needs to understand that the close rounds have to be won by him. He has to start them. He has to get off first. He has to finish the rounds. It just makes no sense that he still fights this way. I thought he had a little more fire in this fight, and I felt that Vonis edged it, but it wasn't kind of situation where I felt like, here's a guy that you know, they got totally robbed. I didn't feel that at all.
No, I think Vonis has to, again, look in the mirror and say, what were my shortcomings? The thing that was maddening, two things. Number one, he'd get past a very educated left hand of Charlo and get inside, and instead of sticking on the guy's chest and digging to the body, and where he was effective in the first half, he would go right back in a straight line and bounce around the canvas and be aimless for minutes at a time. I've always said about Mark Tarosian, he's a much better gym fighter with headgear and 16-ounce gloves, and he still has a lot of remnants of that amateur style. Second of all, mm-hmm. he kept missing with left hooks over the top as Charlo kept slipping underneath it. Vonis, I'm not Ray Arcel or Emmanuel Stewart, but if you keep missing your left hook high, aim it lower. I mean, it really is that simple. Make an adjustment, and this goes back to the guy that was not there. Now, I didn't realize Joe Goosen and him had a divorce till late last week. I was assuming he was in there working with Joe, who he had professed, I found my guy. Joe Goosen, I thought, really did a nice job in the Willie Nelson fight of going to the whip down the stretch and making sure that Vonis Martirosyan didn't blow that fight. You know, if you really look at it, Gabe, when you lose a two-point fight in a 10-round battle, that literally means if you win 30 seconds here, 5 seconds here, 15 seconds here, that means you win a round there that you lost, and maybe you get a round there that you dropped. That's the difference between winning and losing. And do trainers make a difference, Gabe? Of course they do, in close fights that are well matched. Well, Gabe, this was precisely that, wasn't it?
Yeah, there's no question. You know, Joe Goosen's a guy that can get you, you know, an inch here or there. Can, you know, crack the whip. He knows exactly when to do that. Push you forward. Get you, you know, get you where you need to be mentally. I watched Castillo Corrales again the other day, just because it's that great. And it's precisely what he's doing in that fight. You know, edging his guy forward, making sure that he stays on task, and pointing out the things that he's forgetting or hasn't seen yet. It didn't really happen for Vonis in this, and I actually really liked that marriage. I thought it would last longer, but that's kind of also been Vonis's MO.
Vonis Martirosyan is the Daniel Snyder of boxing. How Daniel Snyder with the Washington Redskins have gone through head coaches, Vonis simply has had no stability within the corner, and I think this particular weekend he may have paid. Gabe, CBS gets back into the boxing ring from the Pepsi Coliseum in Quebec, your main event for the WBC light heavyweight title. Superman, Adonis Stevenson, takes on Saki Obika. The other two bouts, light heavyweights in action, Artur Beterbiev at 7-0 takes on the cagey veteran Gabriel Campillo. Then junior middleweight prospect Julian J-Rock Williams takes on Joey Hernandez. Gabe, some people are shading Saki Obika with the upset, maybe not special, but the alert. I don't see it. I just think he's not technically very good. And here's the other fact. He's a natural 68-pounder.
I think that's a big factor here. You know, he's going to be dealing with a bigger man. I don't think he's – it's not like he's jumping two weight classes, but still, I think Adonis is a big guy. He's a sharp, big puncher. You know, Bika is a rough-and-tumble guy, and maybe you can frustrate Adonis Stevenson and you can kind of beat him up, but you're going to have to walk through some serious fire to get there. And if you're not used to the kind of fire he brings, you know, at age 35, I mean, it's going to be tough. I think Bika's he's a hard out. You know, he's got, what, 6 losses, they're all by decision. He's got some 3 draws as well. I mean, he's just a hard man. So I don't expect Stevenson to knock him out, and I don't expect Stevenson to look good in winning a decision. Saki Obika, to me, it just means ugly fight. And I think that's what this is going to be.
Saki Obika lost his last fight to Durrell for the 68-pound title that he held. And let's be very honest, he is in this position because he's with Al Haymon. That's his number one foremost qualification for this bout. And quite frankly, I think this bout can be a bit of a snoozer because one thing about Obika, he's still very, very durable. Gabe, Campillo is one of my favorite boxers of this past generation. I think he's been absolutely mugged, robbed, bamboozled at least 2 or 3 times. I think he has one of the most deceptive records in boxing, and I think he has one of the most entertaining boxing styles. Here's my question, though, Mr. Montoya. Does he have the legs to hold off Beterbiev?
No, no.
Okay. That's what I thought.
With the durability. I mean, it's a nice car, but it's just falling all apart, you know? And I just think, Yeah, he's going to run out of road this weekend, and you know, Beterbiev is just going to get him. He's going to, you know, beat him up, knock him around the ring, cut it off, and then stop him somewhere between 6 and 8.
Yeah, I look back a couple of years to Campillo as there's tread on the tire, as they say. He got blown out by Sergey Kovalev in what I thought may have been the Crusher's coming out party in NBC Sports. Word is that he had a real bad camp, and certainly it showed that night. Cleaned his act up, and he was absolutely outclassing Andrzej Fonfara for about 7-8 rounds, and literally the wheels fell apart. In fact, he looked like that old Blues Brothers car once they hit Chicago at the end of that movie. He rebounded against Thomas Williams this past summer, but again, Beterbiev at 7-0. They think he's going places very quickly, and he's a very, very strong guy. But Gabe, I would love to see if this fight gets into the second half and Campillo's able to hold him off. You know, we've been very impressed by Beterbiev early on, but you know what? When you score a lot of early knockouts, it does camouflage a lot of things. I just hope we get to see it on this particular afternoon.
Yeah, I want to, you know, he needs it. He needs the rounds, you know. But I just don't, I mean, maybe Campillo can show a little bit of something new, but, you know, or a little bit that the kid hasn't seen and get into those late rounds. But I don't trust his durability. You know, he's 36 years old, and there's times when he looks much older. You know, getting knocked around by Fonfara, who, you know, not, most people don't think a lot of. But, you know, I think he's a little bit more durable than people think. But the kind of guys that he's been facing, you know, are not Artur Beterbiev. I just see mid-round stoppage all over this.
And, Gabe, the other issue, Campillo, he is what I would call a very average puncher. I just don't know if he'll be able to stop Beterbiev in his tracks and really dissuade him from coming on him like waves on a beach. And Gabe, Julian J. Rock Williams, 18-0, kicks off his 2015 against Joey Hernandez. Gabe, if there's a young prospect this year that might make the leap to being what you'd really call a world-class practitioner, I do think it might be this guy from Philadelphia.
Yeah, I really just, I like the work ethic of him. You know, he's facing, you know, a southpaw. I'm not sure he's faced too many southpaws in his career, but, you know, Joey Hernandez, he's not the biggest puncher. You know, I think particularly for this level of fighter, you know, he's got 14 knockouts in 24 fights, or I'm sorry, 27 fights, 2 losses, 1 by KO, 1 draw. But I think he's going to give some movement. He might even give some awkwardness at times, but he's going to be there. And I think, you know, Julian, it's going to be incumbent on him to stay very, very dependent on his jab, his double jab. Keep this guy in front of him, kind of keep him in range, and then get to his body. I really like the work ethic. I haven't watched him up here at the Undisputed. I know you've seen him before. This guy is just they're really eyes on the prize. And I like Steven Edwards, his trainer. I like his mind and just the relationship, watching them work together. They seem like a hell of a tandem.
Yeah, Julian Williams is a very grounded individual. He really is. He does not seem to have that sense of entitlement that a lot of other Heyman clients possess. And speaking of the bread man, Steven Edwards, I was able to interview him about 2 hours ago. This is not the fight they wanted, Gabe, but it's the fight that they were offered, the very big platform. And they said, we had not faced the southpaw yet, so you never know when you're going to get that left-hander that you don't want. So they decided to get that experience this weekend. And before we go to your phone calls, again, that number 347-215-7598. And we have a programming update for you that I think that many of you will enjoy. But Gabe, from Sheffield, England, from the Motor Point Arena, for the IBF welterweight title, Special K, indeed, Kell Brook blows out JoJo Dan. Brook goes to 34-0, 23 knockouts. Gabe, okay, I'm not saying JoJo Dan is the Romanian Sweet Pea Whitaker, but no one's ever done that to him before. And listen, sometimes it's not if you win, it's how you win. And he blows out JoJo Dan, who's never been dominated. He beat a streaking Sean Porter in the U.S. I'm not saying he's a star. I'm not saying he's great. But I think Kell Brook is now a bona fide top 5 welterweight.
There's no question. He looked like a guy that's going to be a problem for a long time. You know, the kind of guy that if I'm a welterweight, you know, on one hand, you know, you don't want to face him because he looks like a stylistic problem. He can box, he can punch, you know, and like you said, you know, Jojo Dan isn't, you know, exactly a world beater, but he's a serviceable guy, he's a durable guy, and to just blow him out of the water like that, really just an explosive four knockdown performance by Kell Brook, it just says something. But you look at it and. In this fractured universe, I mean, he's got the IBF belt. Pacquiao's got the WBO. Mayweather and Keith Thurman are sharing the WBA. Mayweather's also got the WBC. So there's a big part of this pie that he's not. You know, I don't know if Manny Pacquiao is looking to fight Kell Brook if he should beat Mayweather or lose to him. You know, and then if Mayweather beats Pacquiao, the rest of the pie at welterweight certainly belongs to Al Haymon. But Brook is in a great position because he's a draw. I think, you know, he can fight over in the UK, make a lot of money. He's a personable guy, pleasing style. I think he can do well, but it's going to be strange. Again, we have another, you know, kind of a dual universe situation here.
Speaking of that, I don't know the attendance figures. I don't know if they papered the arena. I don't know if they even really do that out there in the UK. I know they have discounted tickets like everywhere else. But that was a sizable throng at the Motor Point Arena, a very loud one. So how long is Amir Khan going to be dismissive of this guy and say, he brings nothing to the table, he means nothing to me, what's it worth? Well, Gabe, last time I checked, he was the guy that's undefeated. And again, Amir Khan's had a tougher schedule, no argument there. But he's the one with the major belt, which absolutely matters. And he's also got a constituency. And, Gabe, I'm not saying it would draw like Frotch Grove at Wembley Stadium last year, but earlier this morning on Twitter, I asked the people in the UK that would know much better than me, I would defer to them, how much does this fight draw? And people are saying 40,000, 50,000, 60,000, 70,000. Meanwhile, Amir Khan has this pipe dream, like most guys, of thinking one day that Brazilian supermodel, she's going to fall in love with me for my personality. In other words, he still wants to be in the Mayweather-Pacquiao sweepstakes. I understand that. But can Amir Khan now with a straight face tell the public that Kell Brook and a fight against him means absolutely nothing?
It makes no sense. You know, I mean, I can understand where he's trying to put himself. But, I mean, it makes some sense in this regard in that, you know, Kell doesn't bring anything but a dangerous style. He probably did a sizable audience, and is at this point, because Khan fights so seldom, and you're right, doesn't have a spotless record. He's not really a draw. His whole thing about, well, I can't really walk on the street without people being all over me. Everybody knows who I am. I'm not sure what universe he's speaking of, but you know, he's not the Beatles or anything. I mean, he didn't really cross over. He came over here. You and I both talked about this when Khan signed up with Golden Boy and decided to become a draw over here. He wasn't done becoming a draw over there.
No.
And then he lost immediately, and he's been nothing but kind of not damaged goods, well, but tarnished goods. So his idea that he doesn't need Kell Brook, he needs Kell Brook more than Kell Brook needs him.
Again, I pose this question to fans in the U.K. Can you name me a bigger, more significant, and this is the key thing here, realistic fight that can be made for Amir Khan than Special K Kell Brook? All right, we're going to get to the phone lines in a few minutes, but that number, 347-215-7598. Once again, 347-215-7598. And we want to note, we are going to be starting at 7 p.m. Eastern time from this point forward, and also we're going to be expanding the show to up to 2 hours. Now, since the beginning, we've been at 90. We've had so many callers being left on the line. We're going to give the option to go another half hour, and depending on the calls, we can go all the way up to a full 120 minutes. So, yes, more Gabe and Steve. Let's get to some of the tweets here. Here's one from Big Rich. Can you talk about Pac with the leg cramp rumors? Gabe, this is an ongoing story, and certain people say it's a problem. Others downplay it. I was with Justin Fortune at the UCLA Drake Stadium this past Friday. He didn't really mention him, and quite frankly, the way Pacquiao was working, and again, I'm not there all the time. I was there for about 2 hours during that session. it didn't seem like he had any problems in his lower body, but I get the sense it's like a lot of athletes, Gabe. They have lingering injuries from overusage.
Well, yeah, I talked to Justin today, you know, and he and I go back, and I always tend to think that he and I speak the truth to each other, and he said it wasn't an issue either, that it's kind of the impression I got, kind of a story that is inherited from the Ariza days, you know, these cramps, and that also that stories, you know, to hear him tell it, kind of get started with, you know, somebody rubs down Pacquiao's calves or he shakes out his legs and all of a sudden he's got cramps. And, oh, my God, what are you going to do? And everybody flips out. I mean, you talk about a kitchen with, like, nothing but cooks in it. And that's just Pacquiao's camp. But I thought that was interesting. Yeah, you guys didn't talk about it. So, obviously, I think you've watched people work out. And you've watched guys train with Remy Korchemny up here. I'm curious, you know, looking at a workout like that with Remy – and looking at what they were doing there in Santa Monica, how would you compare them in terms of, like, you know, sprint workouts and things? Was it anything out of the ordinary?
No, well, this particular day, Pacquiao ran 10 relatively, I would say, relaxed laps around the track. So that's 2.5 miles, shook out a little bit, and then he did a lot of work on the bleachers. A lot of plyometric work where you're going two steps at a time, hopping on two steps at a time, taking long steps. And they did a lot of lower body work. Then afterwards, he shadow boxed a little bit. Then he finished off with abdominals. And he looks to be where he should be 5 weeks before the fight. But did I see him cramping up? There was no evidence of it on that particular day. Here's one from Jimmy, the Jet Tobin. Have there been any hints at the plans for Crawford, provided he gets by DeLorme? Gabe, I haven't heard anything specific. I just get the sense they're going to let him settle in at 140. And should Pacquiao pull the upset May 2nd, I think he's right in the mix eventually to face Manny Pacquiao.
It seems to me that it would make the most sense, you know, because, you know, win or lose, you're going to end up with something. Because I think Crawford beating him at 140 is a substantial accomplishment. And if he beats Pacquiao, even say it's a decision loss to Floyd, but Crawford looks really impressive in besting him, then again, you've still got something. You're even one fight removed from Mayweather with Crawford. Not that he would fight him, but, you know, you're beating a guy that Mayweather just beat, that puts you in rare air. So I think it's all good for Crawford. I think the path is very clear, and it's just all down to him making that transition to 140 and doing it healthily and strongly.
And this is a consistent theme with a lot of fighters, with this, what I call now the nuclear war, not just the cold one. There's a lot of good fighters between 140 and 147, but the pool of available talent really depends on who you're aligned with, either HBO / Top Rank / Golden Boy or Al Haymon / whoever. Here's a question from Chris Jones. What happened to the big Rigondeaux sweepstakes him and his team were expecting when he became a free agent? Gabe, I think that whole team learned a lesson in the boxing business. Doesn't matter how good you are. Doesn't matter where a pound-for-pound list is. If you don't have a constituency or a fan base, this is what you're stuck with. And listen, they can bitch and moan about Arum. Arum didn't do a perfect job of promoting him. But at the end of the day, Arum lived up to his contract. And I think that they expected some offers to come their way. There were rumors of Roc Nation. People thought maybe he'd go to Asia. The bottom line is, for as good as he is, unfortunately, in many ways, and by today's standards of the boxing business, he is considered, I think, unpromotable.
Yeah, and I that makes not a lot of sense to me. He's a good boxer. I think maybe it's you know, maybe he wants right of refusal with all the opponents that he can face. I don't know. You would think at least maybe Al Haymon would serve him up. But here's the thing is that he'd beat all Al Haymon's guys near that weight, I think. So then you have Rigondeaux, who doesn't speak English. You know, maybe that's a problem. I don't know. I don't know if he's unpromotable. I just think, you know, because he's older. Maybe that's also the problem, you know, that you're not going to – if he beats all your guys, you're left with this guy who's kind of older and not really going to get much bigger. I mean, where are you going to move him to, 126? I don't really know if he ever will feel good at that weight. He's not going to 130. He's too small for it. So he is kind of in a strange place that he is that good that nobody wants to face him. At the same time, it's hard to invest in the future because he's already a little out of his weight class at 122.
And here is one tweeting from Rocky Top, Tyrannus Turan. Vonis is what we thought he was. Slams table. Dennis Green walks off the stage. You're exactly right. Just good enough to compete at the world-class level and limited enough to lose. 347-215-7598. Gabe, let's get to the phone lines.
In the 860, you're live on the next round. 860.
Hey, what's up, guys? How you doing? CT.
What's going on?
Hey, how you guys doing? Just want to talk about these past weekend's fights. I thought Charlo edged it out, but I think Mother Rose should have went to the body a little bit more. And I think Charlo did good. He's very fundamentally sound, so you got to make him uncomfortable in the ring. And I don't think Vonis did enough. As far as Gary Russell's concerned, I think it was just a stylistic matchup. I think he was just too quick for Gonzalez, and he plants his feet before he throws a combination. So I think Gonzalez was there for the taking. I think with Lomachenko, he fought a fighter who matched him like for foot movement. So maybe that was the trouble. I don't think he'll ever beat Lomachenko. I think he should stay away from Walters. But I think he does well against Morris.
CT, I think he does well against Morris, and I think he absolutely outspeeds and outquicks Leo Santa Cruz. Now, it's going to be interesting because these Heyman guys, up until this point, pre-PBC, they get what I call the Secret Service. In other words, they are very protected. Now, Heyman is the puppet master, and he's matching A-sides against B-sides. And it'll be very interesting, Gabe, to see how long does the kid gloves treatment of, let's say, a Leo Santa Cruz, how much longer does that take place?
Hopefully not much longer. It's really he needs to face somebody, you know. And I'd love to see him versus Gary Russell. I think that's a hell of a fight. And in some regards, I think it's kind of what Leo's for. He's a mini Margarito, and he's there to be pressure, you know, to pressure, to take shots, and to make a guy like Gary Russell look fantastic. I imagine that his days, you know, as we've heard, you know, about the Al Heyman, you know, what Al Heyman has said about 2015, get ready for the tough fights. That one, maybe we'd see that later on down the line in this year.
CT, quick question. Just judging by your comments, are you still a little skeptical of Mr. Russell?
In a way, yes, because like I said, I think Gonzalez was there for the taking because of the speed advantage. And dealing with like Russell's been his opposition coming up in the ranks, I still think he needs to be tested. I don't think Gonzalez had the skills to test him, but like I said, I think if he goes against the other elite, I don't think he does so well.
You know what I want to see, guys? The WBC mandatory, and assuming that he doesn't dump the belt like Riddick Bowe for the time being, is a really tough, solid Mexican that's better than his record, Robinson Castellanos, who's on a pretty good run. He's not great. I'm not calling him Salvador Sanchez, but that's a hard-nosed guy who I think has a lot more battery life than what Johnny Gonzalez showed. How he deals with that, I think, might be a better picture of the long-term future of Gary Russell.
I was going to ask you guys, is there any chance that maybe if Cal Brook can get Amir Khan, do you think there's any chance of maybe a Keith Thurman maybe unifying the title with him?
Oh, I think that's certainly a possibility. I mean, I think Keith Thurman is the type of guy that would do a lot of things, but there's one thing that Al Heyman guys do not need is a passport because they don't travel. And again, Eddie Hearn has done business with Al Heyman, traveled his guys over, but a lot of those guys are B-sides, okay? Kell Brook, in my opinion, right now, as it relates to a fight with Keith Thurman, he's the A-side. So unless Thurman is willing to buy a ticket to the UK and travel, you do have to wonder how realistic is that matchup. CT, we got to get running, okay? Thanks for the call. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. Again, the expanded, new and improved next round, we can go up to 120 minutes, yes, 2 hours, of Gabriel Montoya and Steve Kim. Gabe?
931, you're live on the next round.
Oh, hey, keep calm, seeing Rocket Top people. How you doing?
Mr. Turan, what's going on?
Nothing much. Same thing as I had to I was listening on the radio because I canceled my Showtime subscription. Is Showtime going to have this deplorable schedule this entire year? Or I don't get it.
Eduardo, here's what I think took place. And the ironic thing is they are literally the only network, I believe, that's doling out a license fee. In other words, paying for Al Heyman-affiliated content. Now, I think what happened is, Gabe, now tell me if you think I'm nuts, because they were negotiating the Pacquiao-Mayweather fight, and I don't think Les Moonves was necessarily keen on his network being all Heyman all the time without that fight taking place. While Heyman was lining up these other deals with these other networks, by the time Showtime got on board, they were last in line. And it shows in terms of the quality of fights they're getting at this juncture.
Yeah, it's kind of a beautiful thing to watch, you know. I mean, I think maybe I don't know. I don't have a lot of friends left in the sport, and certainly, you know, no love for my enemies. But I mean, watching them, I mean, I don't know. Chavez Fanfara might end up being a fun fight in a kind of Latin Fury sort of way. It's not really gonna. I don't think anybody's lining up to see it, considering what else is going to be on that night. I mean, Matisse versus Provodnikov, Crawford, Delorme, and I think they might be playing Batman Begins again later on after those fights on HBO.
Well, Oscar will be watching that because he missed it, actually, so he DVR'd it, Gabe. He just tweeted that literally 20 seconds ago.
That's great. It's a DVR world, you know, and it's a hell of a movie. But, yeah, no, I mean, it's nice to see Showtime kind of get last in line at the trough and see what's left. And I think, if nobody else is going to confirm what people were saying about Les Moonves and what he was doing to Al Heyman, I think that just says it all, like you said.
Mm-hmm. I got another question. Will the casuals take over boxing and make all these PBC trash belts like the new WBC, WBO, et cetera, or what do you think is going to happen? Because if they're going to discard boxing history, I mean, you could do that with the UFC because they have no history. They made their own path. But, I mean, we have a lot of history in boxing. This is not, you know, MMA here. I mean, what do you guys think?
You know, I think that's what they're banking on, but I'll say it right now. Easier said than done, and I do believe that the sanctioning bodies, at least two or three of the major four, will start to strike back before they become marginalized.
Hmm. Okay.
Now,
I'd like
to get more of a historian's take on it, you know, because we've had other sanctioning bodies, right? And we've had the mob running the sport, and then they went away, and now we have the current kind of mobs, you know, in the sanctioning bodies running the sport, but they also kind of run it in this really, again, a multiverse of, you know, four different belts. And the WBO really wasn't that well recognized by the networks until Hamed and Klitschko, you know, who held the belts until they got in the business with them. Then they started caring about the WBO, and I think maybe Roy Jones held the version as well. So, you know, things do change, and fans kind of forget that the sport, you know, it started without any belts. You know, and then it's gone through a lot of different variations. So, again, I think it's all down to the coffers. You know, we'll see what everybody's trying to litigate and how everybody's trying to respond. Can HBO stand alone? And is the product that they're going to be getting from everybody that's not a Heyman sycophant, is it going to help them do that? We'll see.
Mm-hmm. Eduardo, anything else?
No, that's all I have, guys. Hey, guys, you guys keep up the great work. I love your show, man.
All right, thank you very much. In about 5 or 6 minutes, we'll go through some news and notes, and later on we'll have the fight preview, a busy weekend of boxing ahead of us. Again, this show is brought to you now by the Iron Gym. Call them at 818-322-4627. They are located at 14548 Ventura Boulevard in Sherman Oaks, California. Gabe, who's next on deck?
760, you're live on the next round.
Hey, what up, guys? It's Andrew, San Diego. How you doing?
Andrew, welcome aboard.
Two questions for you. One, how realistic is this Amir Khan Altieri rumor?
Ugh, you know, I hate to tell you this. I think there's actually legs to that rumor. I do, and I think it's a terrible mix of styles. When you have two guys that are mirror images and they're not offensive-minded punchers, or at least Algieri certainly isn't, I think it's a waltz. And I think that there is a very good possibility, unfortunately, that fight comes to fruition.
It's painful to me because I got so much belief in Amir Khan. I think he could be so like dangerous to the top five in the division, but he's just cherry picking, man, just trying to get that big fight, and it's frustrating. But
it is.
Anyway.
There's no shortcuts to greatness, and just kind of putting things on pause. Like, let me just kind of tread water, you know, and then hope that the big fight, you know, I'll be available for the big fight. I just don't. There's no substitute for activity and fighting and winning good fights in order to get into position. It's just, look at Marcos Maidana.
You know, there's a lesson to be learned here. In December of 2013, if Amir Khan just would have faced Devin Alexander then, it's my particular belief, he would have gotten Floyd last May. And now he seems to be that hamster on the treadmill, going nowhere. Personally, I know why he's not taking Kell Brook, because he wants to save his place in line for Pacquiao or Mayweather. Here's the issue, though. What if he's not really in line? Anything else?
Yeah. Just, you spent the morning with Peck. I was just wondering, what's your overall impression compared to past fights, past camps overall? Like, comparing the two, what do you think's different, if anything?
You know, I can't necessarily say there's a big difference. He's always been in pretty good shape. But in talking to some of his associates that I know have been there for years and are with him on a daily basis, away from the gym, the word that I got from two different people, just talking to them off the record, he's much more focused. I believe this is the most focused and excited he's been about a particular fight since at least Cotto, and probably since De La Hoya. The last 5 years, I'm not saying he went through the motions, but I do think that things got a little bit stale and boxing became boring for him. I've seen a lot of athletes work hard physically, but their minds aren't really into it. And one guy told me that there's a different look in Manny Pacquiao's eyes. So take that for whatever you will.
All right, guys. Thanks a lot, man. You guys be easy.
Thanks a lot. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. It's a 90-minute-plus version of the next round with Steve Kim and Gabriel Montoya on the Leave It in the Ring radio network. Gabe?
714. You're live on the next round. 714.
Hey, it's Lenny the Fight Smith, guys.
Lenny, what's going on?
Hey, what's up, man?
Hey, I got to eat quail really quick for predicting that UCLA even had a chance against Gonzaga. I pushed that one.
Lenny, I told you, this was what I called a lavin. You get to the Sweet 16 somehow, and then reality sets in on that second weekend.
Yeah, Cinderella's shoe was definitely missing.
Right. So what's going on, Lenny?
You know, I didn't get a chance to watch any of the fights live. I just caught up with on Sunday night. I mean, Kell Brook, I got to agree with you, Steve. Kell Brook looks legit. I saw him beat up, I mean, not beat up, but handily beat a legitimate Porter live at StubHub Center. And, I mean, he looked really good that fight. He looked really good on Saturday. I mean, I think he's definitely a contender in the welterweight division.
Lenny, I said it before last week. When you rate him like a baseball player and all the skills, he doesn't have what I'd call a lot of nines and tens. But he has a lot of sevens and eights across the board. And I know he got rocked by Carson Jones, but you know what? That's part of the learning process. Again, this is a well-rounded fighter who is consistently getting better, and he's only 28 years old, so he is stepping right into the thick of what I think is his physical prime.
It makes sense, too, that he wants Floyd. Floyd beats Pacquiao, he's got all the belts except for the belt that Kell Brook has. Khan could have that fight. He could get that belt. And it would make sense, marketing-wise. It just makes no sense to stave off. Either you can beat people or you can't. Either you're a fighter or you're not. I don't understand what Amir Khan's doing.
Lenny, anything else?
I love Kell Brook asking for those fights and trying to get the big fights. I mean, he's not trying to run. He's putting his name out there every chance he gets, asking for Marquez, asking for Khan, asking for whoever. I mean, you love seeing that in a fighter, especially a guy that just became champion.
You know, guys, the fight that he may be getting next, and I know that there's mutual interest, and I've asked that side of the equation, are you willing to go to the UK, and they said they were, is Brandon Rios. Now, listen, I thought Brandon Rios looked very good against the ghost of Mike Alvarado, but I also think it's a mirage. I think that Brandon Rios, for as gutty and tough as he is, I think he would be getting a welterweight reality check from Special K if they fought in June.
I think that's competitive. Fun, yes. Competitive, probably not so much.
It's an event.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a name builder. You know, it's something that it would be entertaining, and I think, you know, Brandon could push him into spots, but he just hasn't really shown much at welterweight. You know, Brandon's big advantage early on, I mean, he could fight. He's a hell of an inside fighter, but was being able to overwhelm people with size and strength. I don't think he's got that advantage at 147. Now he's just a guy that can take it. You know what I mean?
Lenny, is there anything else we could do for you?
You know, I just quickly wanted to touch on the Golden Boy lawsuit that everybody neglected to mention on the broadcast of the fight on Saturday night.
Lenny, I'm sure that's just an honest oversight by Showtime.
Yeah, and Paulie the truth teller, you know. He just completely forgot that the guy in the main event had a big lawsuit against him that was just filed. You know, I'm just blown away that Golden Boy did not name Heyman. I mean, officially, he's not a defendant in that lawsuit, even though his name is plastered throughout the document. I was looking through, I don't know if it was the filed version or a draft, but they referenced Heyman a couple times. And he's not named as a defendant. From me looking at it, if all their allegations are true in the complaint, he should be a defendant. He should be a named defendant in the case, but they just won't. I just see it happening potentially down the road again with Khan because he's still under contract with Golden Boy. I can see them offering him fights, him saying no, and then down the road when he eventually gets free of this Golden Boy contract, taking the same fights with Heyman.
Lenny, it's funny you should say that because when the rumor started coming out yesterday about Khan Algieri, it was news to the Golden Boy people. Let's just leave it at that.
Thanks, guys.
Lenny, thank you for the call. We'll go through some news and notes right now. If you want to call in again, we can go all the way to 7 o'clock long as there is participation. 6 o'clock Pacific. 347-215-7598. If you want to tweet us, you can do so at SteveUCNLive and at Gabriel_Montoya. Gabe, what do you make of this? The WBC mandates what they call an open negotiation for their light heavyweight title between Adonis Stevenson and Sergey Kovalev. But here's the booby trap here. Main Events has made it clear that they are going to defend with their IBF mandatory against Najib Mohammadi. And I believe that they were given clearance by the WBC to do that. So, okay, putting that aside, that's for Kathy Duva to work out. What if a purse bid took place, and I think it could be going down that road, and Mr. Al Heyman and his deep war chest puts up this unbelievable offer? I mean, like $10 million. If your Main Event's in Kovalev, do you tell HBO, hey, business is business? I mean, just think about that scenario because I think it's very plausible, Gabe.
And then all of a sudden things change, you know. And hey, can you guys forget about that lawsuit we filed? Let's do this. Yeah, I mean, it's very possible that could end up happening. But it's also very possible that Adonis Stevenson just drops the belt. When you said booby trap, I thought, well, you know, somebody's ordering him a fight with Kovalev, and his belt got really hot, and all of a sudden he just fell off. I just don't see him facing Kovalev or being forced into it. Certainly not in a purse bid situation. I just don't. I'll believe that fight when I see it. You know.
Yeah, and the other scenario that I thought of: Al Haymon bids $10 million, Rock Nation bids $15 million, and then Stevenson drops that belt like a hot potato. Gabe, it was finally announced officially today, this morning, by Top Rank. They now have a new deal with True TV. They'll have three shows in May. They're working a synergistic relationship with Time Warner and obviously HBO. And yes, they are actually getting a license fee. This is not a time buy. Gabe, I'll say one thing. For the sake of Top Rank and boxing fans, they better not versus this up. In other words, what you did to that network better not happen here, because I think there's more pressure to bring out your best stuff in this current climate.
There's no question. You've got to bring some action fights. You know, people need to – they can't feel like, oh, we just kind of did a little account where we can dump off a few of our lower-tier fighters. You've got to have the feel that you're building something here. Hopefully, you know, Takahiro Ao and versus Ray Beltran. I don't know how, you know, we'll see how exciting that. I mean, it could be exciting, but I don't know if that's exactly what I'm talking about. But Michael Zuski's a guy that I really enjoy watching fight, and I think every time he's in the ring, it should be seen. So maybe that does feel, you know, featuring him does feel a little in line with what I'm talking about. So we'll
right.
see,
and,
you know.
And Gabe, a week or two later on one of their other programs, and I'm not sure where this fight's going to take place, I believe Phoenix, Arizona, they have rescheduled for this series Emmanuel Taylor against Antonio Orozco. So I think it's interesting, in talking to Todd DeBuff earlier about this, they plan to make this like what Tuesday Night Fights was, which is a series which will give a lot of these guys an opportunity to stay busy, or youngsters like Michael Zuski facing another undefeated Russian guy, a chance to really step up. Gabe, this is not a joke. You can insert your own punchline. Andre Ward could be coming back May 30th. Some of the names I'm hearing, now I hope you're sitting down, Gabe. Porky Medina and Marco Antonio Parabon. Gabe, I have no problems with Andre Ward taking a tune-up fight. Fine. I tell you what, HBO, I would hope in their better judgment, says, Andre, good luck to you. When you come back with the real fight, we'd love to have you back on our airwaves, but take that stuff elsewhere.
Terrible. Yeah, no, he needs to – I just don't understand it. I mean, I understand the need for a tune-up, but you can't have these two needs. I want to get paid big-time money. I want to be paid as one of the top fighters in the world, but I want to fight somebody that everybody knows I'm going to beat, and I want you to put it on your network. It doesn't compute for me. And Rock Nation just needs to figure it out. That's the thing. I mean, you used to use this phrase, you know, TV packager. What is Rock Nation? Are they a promoter? Are they a manager? Are they just a TV packager? What are they hoping to have happen here? It's about spending some money in order to get, you know, a good product out there.
Gabe, you know what they've been thus far? An ATM, because they lead the universe in signing bonuses, and they put on one show. Here's the thing that I keep making a point to a lot of people. Steve Kim Promotions can sign hot prospect Gabriel Montoya to a 10-fight billion-dollar deal. Yes, billion. And I can give you a $5
wow.
million-dollar signing bonus. But, Gabe, if I can't live up to that deal – basically, all that deal is worth is the signing bonus, and there's going to be litigation. And word is HBO has told Rock Nation, those are your deals with Cotto and Andre Ward. They're not our deals. So they're kind of out on their own without a safety net. And speaking of Miguel Cotto, this could affect him. I've gotten this confirmed that Lou DeBell and Al Haymon, they have a hold on the Barclay Center for June 20th. So I'm not so sure what that does for Miguel Cotto on June 6th. And Gabe, guess what? Cotto still does not have a dance partner.
Well, he's always got Brian.
Oh, jeez. did you just go there? I think you did.
I did.
Wow.
You know.
Wow. Okay. Look. On that note, moving ahead, I don't want to get anyone in trouble here. Gabe, how much of a factor is this? Freddie Roach will not be in the corner of Ruslan Provodnikov in Verona at the Turning Stone as he takes on Lucas Matisse. Now, I will note this. He is in the gym every day with Freddie, but Freddie's going through some physical ailments. Most of the training is being done, the physical work, by Marvin Simoteo, who worked his corner when he beat Mike Alvarado. How much of a factor is that on this particular night?
I think if the work in the gym is being done, I think it'll be fine. I don't really think we've been in a situation where it's Freddie kind of hitting the whip and moving Ruslan across the finish line. I mean, he's more of the mastermind, the guy that breaks down the tape, explains, you know, where all the holes are. So you've got to think that there's another, I think it's Andre, is the other trainer, one of the original trainers of Ruslan, who's partnered with Vadim Kornilov. And he does a lot of the talking to Ruslan and a lot of the translating. So I think the mechanisms are in place, and I think Ruslan's fine. Especially, I think, after the setback with Algieri, he's hungry. I think he's going to bring it no matter what. And it's, you know, they've got refinements to his game, this, that, and the other thing, game planning. But I think Ruslan is who he is. And you know, Freddie or no Freddie, I don't think it's going to make a huge difference on fight night.
With the type of fight that's going to be, just an absolute grind them out, rock them, sock them, back and forth battle, it may just be who was conditioned better, who was willing to take more. It may not even be about strategy. Let's take a look at this tweet here before we go back to the call. Chaka from the pack, does Chia Santana have a good chance against Saddam Ali? They fight April 25th underneath Klitschko Jennings. Gabe? I think Ali fought very well, boxed very effectively against Louis Abreu, who, quite frankly, was impotent as can be. And I think he was flatter than the plains of Kansas. I think he made Saddam Ali look a little bit better than he is. I think Ali's a skilled boxer. I think he'll win a lot of rounds against Chia Santana. But I think Chia Santana is a live dog because I think he has a real legitimate puncher's chance in this one.
Yeah, I think so. I think he's definitely, and he's got a bit of maturity underneath him. You know, he doesn't have a whole hell of a lot of fights at age 28. He's only 26 fights. But he's got experience. He's got ability to move. He's got ability to punch. I'm going with Saddam Ali in this, though. I think he's starting to come into his own. I just like the style. I think he's a little quicker on the draw. And he's got a nice punch himself. But I think that's going to be a fun matchup, man. I think that's must-see TV, that fight.
347-215-7598 if you'd like to join us. We have up to an hour left on the next round with Steve Kim and Gabriel Montoya. Gabe, let's go back to the phone lines.
585, you're live on the next round.
Hey, guys, it's Jake.
Jake, what's going
on?
What's
up, man?
I was just talking to my friend. I mean, this isn't really regarding any fights particularly. I guess it kind of does because we're talking about the May Pacquiao fight, but he owns a bar here in Rochester, and I asked him if he was getting the May Pac fight for everyone to come in and drink and everything, but and he said, fuck no, it costs $3,400 a
fight.
Just get one lump sum payment just for that fight, he said. And I'm just like, how is that even fucking possible? And they wonder why the boxing audience is shrinking.
Yeah, that's been an issue. And I know people in that realm, and they've always said that boxing does not make itself nearly as available in terms of affordability compared to the UFC. Now, Gabe, this was an interesting story that came out yesterday. I guess the main reason why the pay-per-view price for May 2nd has not been announced is that the organizers of the event are battling the cable and satellite systems over the split. Now, customarily, it's a 50-50 split, right around there. All the money that is derived from a pay-per-view. This time, the promoters want to go 70-30. Now, Gabe, this is unprecedented. Usually, promoters, they absolutely will gouge the fans. Here, they're gouging a corporation or corporations. This is truly historic.
For the fans.
For the fans, though. For the fans. The fans.
That's a beautiful thing. I mean, of course, when you get more than one party involved, 50-50 was great before, but now you've got this other group involved, this other network. Of course they want to split it up, but it's, again, I mean, it shows a lot of the problems with boxing, this fight, that, you know, everybody's got their hand out. There's no real organized way to get everybody involved without screwing the fan. Do you think this is going to push the price up or down?
Oh, I listen, this is greed. And if over the split and how much each side's going to get, I don't see – listen, will it drive the price up or down? If you had to ask me, you had the one choice, I'd say up, because they know they can gouge the public. That's simple.
Yeah, you could charge 110, 120 HD. People will pay it. They want to see this fight. That's crazy.
Jake, anything else?
I was going to ask you, with this, it seems the sanctioning bodies are trying to force a lot of Heyman's fighters into fighters outside of his universe. This has been a trend in the last couple of years, you know, Russell and Lomachenko and on and on. I mean, do you see that happening more and more as Heyman tries to marginalize them and they're kind of fighting for their own relevancy?
Gabe, I think all the sanctioning bodies are doing now is just really enforcing their rules. I believe that if Lamont Peterson, Lucas Matisse happened in 2015 under this current PBC climate as opposed to a couple of years ago, I don't think they would have allowed that fight to go on at 141 to have the loser retain that belt, which ended up being Lamont Peterson. If the sanctioning bodies are aware of what's going on, and I believe they are going to do whatever it takes for their own self-survival. Because quite frankly, these guys that run these organizations and work for them, they're not in any mood to go to Kinko's and print out their resume and get a new line of business.
Yeah, and I think, you know, if you're the sanctioning bodies, the best way to beat Al Heyman is to attack his product. And if he's shown an Achilles heel, it's that it's hard to develop talent. It's hard for him to develop talent. He doesn't have like a Bruce Trampler. He's had to rely on other promoters and their matchmakers. And sometimes it seems like he's making them his damn self. And it's been to his detriment. Whenever he gets in this mandatory situation, he has a tendency to lose because the guy he's facing has generally been seasoned by real fight people, not just a businessman. So I think it's a smart move by the sanctioning bodies to keep ramping up the pressure, destroy his product by forcing his fighters into fights that they can't win.
Jake, anything else?
Oh, thanks.
All right, 347-215-7598. Oh, wait a minute. The president was not made aware of the executive order to move the show up 1 hour and the expanded time. But he says, damn, new time, SMH. Any idea how the Heyman/Stevenson first bit will play out? Also, is Quillen telling the truth or not? Well, we went through the situation. I think that if the Stevenson-Kovalev fight goes to a purse bid, I don't think that there is any doubt that Heyman wins it with an exorbitant bid and will put Kathy Duva, main events, and Kovalev on the spot as it relates to their relationship with HBO. And, Gabe, I think when it relates to Quillen, I don't know what the subject matter is, but can we just assume he's not telling the truth on anything?
I'm just focused on the knockout, Andrew. You know, that's just it. Just Andy Lee's fist landing where we both needed to land and just lights out after that. Everything else is just lip service. I learned to tune him out a long time ago.
Here's a tweet from Jose Santa Cruz. No open to public face-off. One press conference closed to the public. $100 pay-per-view. Only about 1,000 tickets for general public for the fans, if that many. Yeah. Yeah, I think. And here's another issue. Bob Arum says, I had to put the fight in Las Vegas because he said, I live among these people. That is my city. I owe it to them. I think Bob needs to come clean here, Gabe. He had no say in this. Mayweather had the leverage. Vegas is his city. In fact, you could say that's his commission. That fight was only going to be in Las Vegas, and quite frankly, I don't think Bob Arum had much of a say in it.
No, I don't think so. And you know, when Pacquiao got knocked out, that was the end of really any say that they were going to have. you know, you could always argue, well, the numbers are kind of comparable in terms of pay-per-view, and whatever numbers he wasn't matching, Pacquiao could make up with the people that he was facing, maybe being of a higher caliber than who Mayweather was facing. But once Marquez knocked out Pacquiao, there was going to be a lot of acquiescing, and it was very clear at that point who the B side, quote unquote. I really hate that Floyd has turned things into A and B side fighters. He's kind of made that part of the lexicon. But that's the reality of the situation. And for Bob to say anything else is just Bobby and Bob, I guess.
Yeah, here's one from Robert Palmer. What did you think of the production around Brooke versus Dan? For me, it showed the direction Heyman should have gone. Instead, he went generic. Well, the PBC has a certain template. They like the ramps. They like the Hans Zimmer. Meanwhile, every other show at that level, Gabe, that I've seen, whether it was in Montreal for Kovalev against Pascal and Brooke versus Dan, I look at that and I say, that's the way I want my boxing at the world-class level presented.
It is a little bit. You brought up Dan Snyder before, and it's like when a superfan has the money to buy something like that, you hope that they have good style. But it appears that Al doesn't have the best style, and the Hans Zimmer music has got to go. Some of the stuff is a little stiff. It's a little – I expect a little more funk to it. You know, I'm one of those people, you know, I didn't mind KO Nation and its kind of rap silence. But, you know, I mean, I don't need it to be that. But, boy, it's just – like I said, I've called it homogenized. It just seems so sterile. I liked this weekend. I mean, Kell Brook, the UK always knows how to do it. It just seems like – everybody's more excited, passionate fans are not just like – in America, there's just so many things to do or something. We just seem so unimpressed. And, you know, like I've had somebody recently, don't you miss going to the fights in Vegas? No, I really don't actually, because when the fight's over, you're in Vegas.
A couple of things here. The UK does not have a casino system, so you have real fans or a higher percentage of real fans, and they're more vested. And if you go to these fights in Omaha or Denver, there's a hometown feel, and the fans are really into it. And also, I just thought it was interesting that some of the writers were writing breathlessly about, oh, my God, Al Heyman has, like, a fancy new scoreboard and a ramp and video boards. Hey, jabronis, they've been doing that for about 20 years in Europe. And in fact, a lot of the bigger top-ranked Pacquiao shows, they've been doing the same thing. I didn't understand that whole storyline. Anyway, let's get back to the phone line. If you want to jump in, we have up to 53 minutes left. 347-215-7598.
347, you're live on the next round.
Hey, what's up, guys? This is Mike from Queens.
Mike,
what's
welcome
up, man?
Aboard.
What's up, guys? You guys caught me off guard. I wasn't even thinking about my question, but I'll think about it one quick. Okay, I got one. Eddie Hearn seems to be doing a lot of business with a lot of American business with Al Heyman. So does that basically take him out of the HBO business side?
In one word, Gabe, yes.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, if you do a business with Al, you probably would know better than me. I don't know if that just completely disqualifies you or not, but it would seem to me that a guy in the UK, they've already got their market over there. If they can expand over here on one network or the other, I think it's just kind of case by case like all boxing is done.
So Kell Brook has become a Showtime fighter, a Showtime PBC fighter when it comes to America and Top Rank and Golden Boy opponents are definitely out of there.
No! I don't think so, because I know that, and I was told this last week, a couple of days before the JoJo Dan fight, Eddie Hearn had been having discussions with Top Rank regarding Brandon Rios. Now, putting aside what you think of that fight, it does show that at least with Kell Brook, who I believe has a lot of leverage, that at the current time, Mike, he can cross on both sides of the street.
Oh, that's a good way to be then. Okay, and I got another question. Is the J-Rock fight going to be on CBS? Because the time slot, I think it's only allotted for two fights. And if it's not on CBS, where will it air?
You know, that's a great question, Mike. I did not know that. Is this an Abner Martis situation where he suddenly disappears in the thin air and is not on NBC? I assumed that he would be a part of the CBS broadcast. I'll try to ask around and get you a definitive answer on that, Mike.
All right, and another quick question. I don't want to keep you guys too late, but I've been to a bunch of fights in the New York area. I've been to Barclays Center before. Yeah, I think it's a great area, especially probably the best I've ever been on the East Coast seeing a fight. And I haven't bought tickets to Garcia Peterson, and the way I've been seeing on Twitter, the way they give away tickets, should I not buy tickets and just hopefully, you know, just tweet at PBC and them give me a free pair of tickets? Because
I'm not rich. No, Mike, tweet
up
PBC and ask for about a dozen tickets, and you'll probably get them.
Or
sign up for one iota, and hell, they'll pay you for your ass to be in that seat. That's been the pattern
there you go.
Thus far.
All right, sounds perfect. All right, guys, I'll let you go.
Gabe, this is the question that the president was asking about, and he responded to me. He says, Kevin Ioli wrote this, got a lot of heat over being a puff piece, and it relates to Quillen, and it talked about why he didn't fight Korobov. And this is the headline, boxer Peter Quillen put new son, dying uncle before money. Listen, I respect Kevin Ioli, but come on. He was under orders from Heyman. Why not just say it was Heyman? I don't understand. What is with that? Wow, Kevin. Wow. Wow.
I don't have a lot of respect for Kevin Ioli.
Oh,
so,
Gabe. God, Gabe.
That's just me. He just seems to be more of a – he follows the storylines, and he doesn't have a big problem going with the storylines that are handed to him. So I don't know. You know, maybe – I don't know Quillen well enough to know. I know what my personal issues with him are, whether or not this is true. But it seemed to me that he would have said something at the time.
You know what's funny?
Didn't.
I saw some of that stuff going on Twitter. I didn't know what it was about. And people were pointing out the flaws – in that argument or that rationale, because the time frame doesn't really work out. But hey, that's his story, and I guess he's sticking to it. Gabe, who's next?
And can we call the PBC the Premier Boxing Comps? 530. You're live on the next round.
Good evening, guys. It's Ringside Robert, and I guess you have started your show earlier. I'm going to have to make a note of that.
Robbie, we just want to let you know, we started it earlier because we've made the decision to go 90 minutes plus. We've been leaving callers on the line, and so we don't want to do that. So we can go up to 2 hours, but we'll stay 90 minutes at the very least moving forward.
Okay, all right, no problem. So I might cover some old ground that people have already covered here. But you just mentioned, Steve, that Cal Brook has leverage and he can pretty much fight who he wants. Don't you think economically the Khan fight would make the most sense? I mean, I don't see Brandon Rios bringing Cal Brook a lot of money.
No, Robbie, what I said was that he has some leverage in a sense that he doesn't have to be treated like a B-side that's going to get shipped out like
okay.
A lot of other Eddie Hearn clients have been. To be eaten up by Al Heyman's guys like the last 2-3 years. That's
okay.
My point.
Okay. But going over his possible opponents, Juan Manuel Marquez, Brandon Rios, and Amir Khan, those are the three names I've heard. Don't you think the Khan fight makes the most sense because it won't bring him the most money?
Yeah, we talked about that at length. Here's the problem. Khan seems to be very dismissive. He wants to keep his place in line, if he even has one, for Pacquiao or Mayweather. But if you ask the UK fans, which welterweight fight would you want to see, I think it's unanimous that the most realistic option that would do legitimate business, yes, is Kell Brook, Amir Khan.
Okay, and another question, again, I tuned in late. You were talking about how the purse bid with Stevenson and Kovalev, Heyman could drive up the price and put Duva in a difficult position. Don't you think HBO would back her and help her match whatever Heyman wants to pay?
Well, I think within reason. I mean, a lot of these purse bids for these fighters who are affiliated with networks, it comes with the wink-wink agreement like, hey, this is what we're willing to pay, and then they'll bid accordingly. But I'm telling you, when there's a rogue element like Roc Nation Sports who goes way above and beyond what seems to be logical, that throws a monkey wrench into the equation.
Okay. And are we going to see a StubHub type fight on the East Coast with Baratnikov and Matisse? I think that's a shame that that fight is not happening at the StubHub.
Well, you could thank Al for that. And Gabe, I'm telling you, and obviously it's going to take a lot to top this or even be at the same stratosphere. I'm getting the same feeling I did back in 2005 prior to Castillo Corrales.
Yeah, it's got that kind of they're going to come in, they're going to dig in, and whoever starts to back off first is going to be the loser. I think it's going to be a hell of a fight. I expect Matisse to be more of the boxer in this, more of a boxer puncher, and I expect Provodnikov to try to get him into exchanges so that he can land some nasty stuff inside. I think it's just – I cannot wait for that fight.
No, I think that's going to be one of the best fights of the entire year. That has a candidate for fight of the year written all over it, so I'm looking forward to that myself. Okay, thanks, guys. I won't hold it up. I'll let somebody else get on.
Robbie, thank you very much. Again, that number, 347-215-7598, the new expanded edition of the Next Round with Gabriel Montoya and yours truly. Gabe, who's next?
619, you're live on the Next Round.
Hey, how are you doing, guys? This is Juan from San Diego.
Juan, welcome
What's
aboard.
No, I was listening that you started earlier today.
Yes. Yes, we started at 4 o'clock today. We're going to go 90 minutes guaranteed, but we might go 2 hours if we have plenty of callers. We've been leaving people kind of just on the line, and about five or six, maybe even more per show. So we're expanding,
so but
we had to move it back
because
of my exciting nightlife.
So that's a new time slot, 4 o'clock now?
Yeah.
Same bat station, different bat time, yes.
Well, okay, I want to talk about Kell Brook. I think that he's a – his fight against Jojo Dan was what we expected. Just
no, was that a Freudian slip? Juan, was that a Freudian slip? In defense of Jojo Dan, at least he's a real welterweight. This is not a 135 pounder here.
Yeah, I know. I think Jojo Dan was a little bit better than Rod, but well, anyways, he looked good. It was a showcase fight, but I think that his next fight should be against Amir Khan, like most people are saying. I think that Brook is the real deal. I think he looks, as Larry Merchant said, you have to trust your eye, and I think that Kell Brook is really good. So I'm looking forward to him knocking out Amir Khan and getting rid of him, and then going against Thurman. That's the fight I think that would possibly make at least a contender for the Manny Floyd sweepstakes. That would make them make the real contender, I'm thinking. And the other thing is that Gary Russell, he really impressed me. I didn't expect him to knock out Gonzalez in four rounds, but I guess I was a little bit, blinded by the Maris knockout. In the end, Gonzalez has always been that kind of fighter. He's up and down, up and down. We can never trust what we see a little bit more than a couple of fights. He's been knocked out before. But, hey, Russell wins the fighter of the week for me, and Kell Brook, a bright future. That's all I got today, guys. I just wanted to put in my two cents there.
Juan, thank you very much, as always. And next week, 4 p.m., be here. 347-215-7598 is the number to call. If you want to tweet, at SteveUCNLive, at Gabriel_Montoya. Gabe?
714, you're live on the Next Round. 714.
Hey guys, great show so far. Quick question. I know that
Thanks.
Somebody brought up this earlier in regards to the main pack, but what's going on with also the close circuit tickets, and also when are the 1,000 tickets going to go on sale? Have you guys heard anything?
Well, you're making an assumption it's actually 1,000. Gabe, I want to see proof that it's even 1,000. I really do, and this to me. Not that it would really affect us, not that us poor working stiffs could actually afford tickets, but I've never seen a major fight where we're about a month away, and you don't have a pay-per-view price, and you don't have official ticket prices, and they haven't even gone on sale. But again, Gabe, the theme of the day, for the fans.
Is it going to happen?
Right, you know what? The other thing that I did notice, too, I was looking at the MGM's website for the MGM Grand Am for September when Floyd normally fights. The room prices, they're like outrageous. $1,900 for Friday night, $2,200 for Saturday night. Is it like there's something in the works already, or, you know, it's just like...
again, for the fans. For the fans.
And that's just Motel 6. Yeah, I've heard...
Hey, will they leave a light on for you?
Yeah, you know, it's nice. They'll leave a lot of things on for you. People kind of wandering around. I think in my early days, I stayed in the shadow of the MGM over at, that's what we call the Motel 6. But, you know, I think it's pretty scary, man, all the price gouging. I've heard the airline tickets, everything. This is not a fight for the fans. This is a fight for the 1%.
Yeah. Is there anything else we could do for you?
No, great show so far, man. Thank
all
you.
All right, thank you very much. Game, let's roll through some more calls here. Who's next on deck?
703, you're live on the next round.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good, who
doing
is it?
Well.
Yeah, this is CJ from D.C.
CJ, welcome aboard. A lot of initials there.
Yeah, there you go. Listen, I know I just came in the last 20 minutes or so. I know these callers have already spoken about the Kell Brook Amir Khan fight. But I have two questions. You know, I was reading that obviously that Golden Boy did a lawsuit against Johnny Gonzalez. Could the same thing happen to Amir Khan? Like, isn't Amir Khan under Golden Boy and Al Haymon is just his advisor? Or is he completely with Al Haymon?
You know, that's going to be the next issue. I've been told that when Golden Boy recently has tried to reach Amir Khan, remember that song from New Edition, Mr. Telephone Man?
Oh, yeah.
That comes to mind because I think this is going to be the next conflict slash lawsuit slash buyout. Because I think the writing is on the wall. If you're with Al Haymon or you're with Golden Boy, but you can't be with both.
Wow. And my second question is, I mean, it seems like Amir Khan's really aloof. I mean, I thought that was a really exciting fight. I mean, the caliber of the competition with Dan, he wasn't up to par. But I thought for what Brook was coming off, I thought it was a really good fight, a good show. The fact that he called him out in the middle of the ring and then Eddie Hearn called him out, I mean, it seems like Amir Khan has been real elusive. Who is out there for him to fight? Because they're saying Bradley's going to fight K-9. Pacquiao and Mayweather, that's obviously tied up. He's talking, Bradley's going to fight K-9. There's no way in hell he's going to fight Cotto. So realistically, who is there for him to fight?
You know, sometimes you got to make boxing more of a sport than business. And you can wait in line for 50 years like you're at the DMV on a Monday morning for Mayweather or Pacquiao. Meanwhile, in your own country, they want Brook versus Khan, and heaven help him if he picks Chris Algieri. I don't think anything else needs to be said.
Is that realistic that that could happen?
I believe so, yes.
How's the guy supposed to train?
Yes. I mean, when I asked Joe DiGuardia, Gabe, the promoter of record for Chris Algieri, is an Amir Khan fight being discussed, he didn't deny it. CJ, is there anything else we could do for you?
No, I'm enjoying the show. Thanks.
All right, thank you very much. Here's a tweet from LRS. Do you think that there could be a round-robin tournament with Gonzalez, Mares, Russell Jr., and Santa Cruz? Well, given that the fact that they are all on the Haymon side of the equation, I would say that there is a possibility, Gabe.
Well, I think it's incumbent on Al to make that those kind of tournaments, and I think that's part of their business plan. It's to have these guys fight the tough fights. You know, I mean, how many guys can Leo Santa Cruz face before people are like, look, what is this that you're doing here? What are you? So I think that will certainly happen.
Mm.
I'm hoping. Should we got about
yeah.
Seven more calls here. Let's see. This is from a from the 954. You're live on the next round. 954. Boom! First knockdown of the night.
Boy, we almost went all 15 rounds there, Gabe. We were close. We were like John Tate against Mike Weaver. We were right there, and then that happened.
Richard Steele steps in and stops it. Private number, you're live on the next round. It's like a 111 number. Anything? No? All right. Boom, two in a row. 724, you're live on the next round. 724.
I'm just listening, guys.
Okay. That's three knockdowns. And,
do we have a
three-knockdown
rule?
Slip. I think that was a slip. If you're just
that's a slip. Okay.
Just...
okay. Let's wipe off the gloves. Let's get back to the action.
510, you're live on the next round. 510.
Hey, guys. Fernando up in Richmond. How you guys doing today?
Good. What's going on, Fernando?
Hey, great, man. I got a little bit of a question / statement. I think you guys are overestimating the Matisse fight, Matisse-Bronnikov fight, because while Bronnikov, he has a lot of power, he has a lot of heart, I think Matisse, man, he gets frustrated easily, and I don't think he's ever really shown that much heart, man. I guess Garcia kind of like took over the fight in the later rounds. Matisse was happy to go along with it. I think Bronnikov's going to either knock him out or dominate him in the last few rounds, man. I really don't see that being an all-time great fight because I don't think Matisse has the heart or the will of either Castillo or Corrales, to be honest. So I don't know. Maybe you guys, what do you guys think?
All I know is this. Both guys in recent years have been involved in fight of the year candidates, if not the fight of the year. They both have pleasing styles. I don't know. I would bet on it, Gabe, actually being a barn burner.
Yeah, I think the thing that really is sold this fight for me is that Matisse, you know, he should have beaten John Molina handily, and yet he showed vulnerability in that fight, the ability to get hit by someone who telegraphs his shots. And, you know, Provodnikov doesn't always telegraph his shots. Against a mover, he's going to have some trouble. And you know, like a Herrera or an Algieri, guys that are purely, like, about being kind of herky-jerky and being awkward, but very movement-based styles. I think Matisse, he has lapses. He's going to have to box his ass off and have the fight of his life. I mean, this is a guy that lost in a boxing match to Danny Garcia. So I think Provodnikov can get to him. I think his power is real. It'll be a different fight than Diego Corrales versus Castillo, but I think there's all the markings of a fight of the year candidate there.
I think it's funny. For all that we talk about the power and the power shots, I think whoever effectively uses their jab to set up their offense but also use it as a shield, I think that is the key to this fight, believe it or not. Fernando, anything else?
Yeah, I have another question. I live up here in the Bay Area, right? And I'm just wondering, when are we going to get some big fights up here, man? We got Mexicans and we got a lot of money up here, man. Like, what's going on, dude?
Now, this is funny. I've always thought San Francisco was an underrated fight town. Now, there were plans last year. I remember tweeting this out. They were going to do a regular series of fights at the Longshoremen's Hall, which I heard is a great little venue. And Mercito Hesta made his return on a Fox Sports 1 Golden Boy show last summer. And they were all set to do a regular series. And then in late November, they did a show with Kareem Mayfield, who drew a crowd that was like akin to the black hole at the Raider game. And it was such a mess. And it caused like a riot and there was debris everywhere that the venue basically was scared away from boxing. Thanks a lot, Kareem, as usual.
Well, I have to say one thing. I have to stick up for the Bay Area a little bit, man. Anybody knows anything about the Bay Area? It's not really San Francisco. It's not really a boxing market per se. If you really want people to show up and support the fight, you either have to do it in San Jose, where we get a lot of, you know, they give a lot of support to fighting up there and just in general, you know, mixed martial arts or whatever have you, or Sacramento, which has a huge history of boxing. You know, that's where Carlos came from.
Don,
you know,
Chargan,
like
Tony the Tiger Lopez, Loretta Garza. You know,
Hispanic.
I will say this for San Francisco. The last major HBO fight they had was in 2001. I believe it was in October or November. Now, Doug Fisher, our colleague, was there, and it was a sold-out night with Manny Pacquiao and Floyd Mayweather in co-features. So, I believe that region needs to have more fights, but when Robert Guerrero stopped becoming a draw there, Andre Ward kind of going into retirement, Nonito Donaire never being developed there by Top Rank. I don't think those things have helped the cause for you up there, Fernando.
And one last thing. I read your article today on I'm glad you brought up Andre Ward. You brought him up to – you might be having a fight up there in May. That's not the kind of big fight I was talking about, man.
Fernando, I guess I won't see you there.
No, like even his own people. Like I have black friends that live over there, and some of them actually went to the first couple fights you had over there, and they were all wanting to support him. They all wanted to show him some love, and they were really disappointed with him. They thought he was boring. If I bring it up to him that he's going to fight in there in May, none of them are going to be excited at all. None of them are going to want to see him.
So, Fernando, hold on. You're telling me Ward, Marco Antonio, not Barrera, Parabon does not excite you? What type of boxing fan are you, man?
I will be going just because I'm super hardcore and I'm a fiend. I will be going.
You know what?
It's pretty funny.
You need help, Fernando. You need help.
I
explore different gyms
up here all the time, man. We used to have like Tahoe fights, Reno fights, Sacramento fights, and now we don't get nothing. So now I got left over with scraps, man. I got Andre Ward, man. That's what I mean. You guys got to talk to Bob Arum, talk to Oscar. I know Al Haymon, he's just a television packager, so he's not even going to try to come up here. But
you know,
you got to hook us up.
You know what it's like, Fernando? It's like what Eddie Murphy said. If you starve a man and you give him crackers, that cracker is going to be the greatest meal in his life. And it's like, if I don't feed you anything, I don't need to give you steak. I'll just give you Spam, and you think I'm a four-star chef. That's the theory.
I know, man. It's a sad situation, man. But, hey,
all right, Fernando.
Really enjoy the show.
Absolutely. Gabe, before we hit the phone lines again, and now we're into the bonus round of the next round, let's go to the fight preview. Thursday night from the Belasco Theater, Fight Night Club, Julian Ramirez and Yamaguchi Falco. And this Falco is not the one that did Rock Me Amadeus. They are going to be on the televised portion of this. And on Friday night fights on ESPN2, Peter Petrov takes on Gamaliel Diaz. Gabe, I'll say it right now. Petrov is a good little lightweight, and I think he's an entertaining little guy. I think he gets past Diaz, whose best days were at featherweight, but consider me a Petrov fan.
Yeah, he's just fun to watch. He's aggressive, and I'd like a guy that likes to get inside, dig to the body, and invest in that, and that sets up just about everything else that he does. He's just true professional. I really like watching this Julian Ramirez kid fight. Fun little southpaw, and he's aggressive. He talks about his favorite fighters being Mike Tyson and Finito Lopez. And when you watch him fight, you know, we interviewed him yesterday on Leave It in the Ring, and we talked about it, that he's got that technique of Finito, or at least that mindset, but then he's got that ferocity that both Tyson and Finito had, that they're not just – you know, looking to box, they're looking to get out there and do some serious professional beating on someone. That should be a fun fight. I like that Golden Boy has gone back to the kind of club show, but like the more higher-end club show. I haven't been to the Belasco Theater, but I imagine, you know, it's going to be a fun atmosphere for anything like the old fight night.
Gabe, I went there about a month ago when they reopened this series, the L.A. Fight Club. Now, I had nothing against Club Nokia, but it was very sterile and clean, kind of cookie-cutter. The Belasco Theater has a lot of character. It really does. You look at the artwork on the wall, the way it's built. It's an old building that's been refurbished, and you are right on top of the action. It really is a neat little venue. And, Gabe, the BKB returns on Saturday. Gabe Rosado takes on Curtis Stevens, and Jesus Soto Cross takes on Ed Paredes. Gabe, I know what some of the purses are. I got to tell you, if you're a veteran fighter – who doesn't have a lot going on, and you're willing to kind of fight in an unusual atmosphere, this is not a bad alternative.
No, I don't disagree, you know. And there's two fighters. I have video coming out on both of them training for this. And it's interesting watching, like, the undisputed training. You've been up here to the gym recently. You've seen the snack dome, which is actually that snack altitude dome, which simulates high altitude training, but at, you know, just regular sea level. It's the same size as the ring, and you can't use it. There's no ropes inside there. So these guys will do light sparring inside the snack dome, getting ready for this fight. And it's a nice avenue. There's two other guys that train up here, Jonathan Chikas, and Tony Johnson, cruiserweight, and I believe Chicas is fighting Pelos Garcia in the welterweight bout. These are guys that you know, especially since there's not a lot of fight venues up here, not a lot of avenues for a guy up in Northern California to get to the big time. These guys get to be treated very well. They're making decent salaries, better than decent, you know, if you're fighting like a four-rounder on ESPN. And they're being treated like real fighters, like top-shelf guys. Everybody gets their own room. They're driven to the BKB gym and back. They all seem very happy with the deal. And you know, it's a different format. It doesn't count on their records because it's two-minute you know, rounds and no ropes. So they're classifying it as something different. But I find it to be very exciting. I think Rosado Stevens is going to be a hell of a fight.
And their first show in the summer, Gabe, I'm a traditionalist, but I was entertained by the first edition of BKB. And again, it's not going to take over boxing or the MMA, but it's an alternative for fighters who have a bit of a track record that don't have plans in the interim. And as you mentioned, they're treated well, very good accommodations, and they are paid well. Let's make one more sweep of the calls on the next round with Steve Kim and Gabriel Montoya. That number, if you want to jump in, we have up to 25 minutes. 347-215-7598.
720, you're live on the next round.
Hey, Steve. Hey, Gabe. I have a question. I just tuned in, so I don't know if you covered this, but I think we got to the Chavez Jr. question.
Ask away.
Is he training full-time with Goosen? Because I keep seeing him post pictures training out of a casino in Lake Tahoe.
Oh, no.
And,
he actually is doing a training camp in Lake Tahoe. It's interesting. Now, when I talked to Joe about this marriage about a month ago or a couple weeks ago, it was my understanding that he told Mr. Goosen, I'm going to come to Van Nuys, the 10 Goose Gym, and I'm going to be one of your fighters. Now, to me, you've been to that gym, Gabe. It is hot as a furnace. Now, for a guy that needs to lose weight, what the hell are you doing in Lake Tahoe? Are you there to ski or to box?
Steve,
well, let's be really clear about another thing. Let's be clear. Chavez Jr. is never really training 100% anywhere. He could be in his kitchen. He could be at Tahoe. He could be at Goosen's gym. He's probably operating at about 75.
It's still better than any kitchen. I will give him that.
You literally see pictures of slot machines behind them. The ring is like set up right in the casino.
So is he rolling craps in between rounds? Wow, then that is hard work, dedication.
Hey, what do you expect from the guy? And my second question is also about that. I've seen this happen in boxing, so how is Chavez Jr. going to fight since he's under contract with Top Ranker? Could it be that they're going to try and stop it last minute?
No, they're not. No. It's very similar to the situation with Star Boxing and Canelo Alvarez. They've had litigation for years, but he is still fighting on under the Golden Boy banner. It was explained to me that you really can't keep anyone from making a living. Now, as a boxer, you make a living by fighting. And I believe that the litigation is ongoing, and this whatever damages can just be added on fight by fight. But it's been made clear to me Top Rank still has litigation with Chavez/Heyman, and April 18th will proceed.
Great. No, it's for some reason I'm putting all of my hopes and dreams in the Chavez, because I want to see Chavez Jr. versus training out of a casino isn't really giving me much hope that he can get past Funfara. So,
Gabe, you think that's a dangerous fight, don't you?
Yeah, if you don't prepare for that guy, I mean, he's not, you know, we'll see if he's a world beater, but I mean, Chavez has struggled with, you know, Matt Vanda. He had problems with Brian Vera. I tend to think that Funfara is a little bit higher caliber guy. He's hungry. He's got a good jab. And he doesn't strike me as a small guy. I think he's going to be able to deal with Chavez Jr.'s strength. Maybe they worked out a deal with the casino, make a little side money by training him to fix.
Guys, what I'm hearing for that fight, I guess StubHub Center is individually cold calling its past ticket buyers, trying to drum up some ticket sales for this fight. And I've said this for a while. the bloom is off that Chavez rose. He is not the draw that he was back in 2011 and 12. And I don't think it helps that on April 18th that HBO has a very good doubleheader capped off by Provodnikov and Matisse. I think that's going to be a very, very sparse or papered crowd in Carson, California for Fanfara Chavez.
I agree. I'm calling it here. The first El Heyman upset is going to be the Chavez versus Fanfara.
You know what? You are on the record, and you are on the A-track. Thank you for the call.
All right, thank you, guys.
You guys. Gabe, who's next?
203, you're live on the next round.
Hey, guys. It's Alex Pierpaoli calling from Hamden, Connecticut. How's it going?
Alex P.
What's going on?
Good. What's up?
I got two questions. One, a sort of PED / Mayweather-Pacquiao question, and one, a Al Heyman question. The Mayweather-Pacquiao thing, they're using USADA, if I'm not mistaken, and I was just curious if you could give, Gabe, if you could give, again, the main difference between VADA and USADA. Isn't VADA the one that has the, what is it, the carbon isotope ratio test that is the one that has caught everybody? And wouldn't that be the more superior testing procedure?
Well, because both VADA and USADA are able to, USADA is a signatory of WADA, the World Anti-Doping Agency, meaning they have to follow all of WADA's code, including like arbitration, all that, to the letter. They could choose, within that to like do as many CIR tests as they want or as little. Now, VADA, on the other hand, they are compliant in some regards, and in some regards they're not. They're not a signatory, but you can't use like WADA labs like VADA does unless you have certain policies and procedures. You meet certain standards. Now, there's certain things they do differently. They don't test for marijuana because they live in modern times and think it's a stupid law, and so they don't follow it. They don't test for it. But regarding CIR, that's kind of their calling card, is that nobody's ever done this before them, is using CIR as part of their screener. On every sample, they test for testosterone. They test for EPO and HGH, all of that part of their screening process. They don't wait for some sort of red flag and then do it. USADA, again, they don't tell you because they like to use the old school, you don't know, so that's kind of a deterrent, too, way of doing things.
Wow. Okay. So, all right. Yeah. Wow. It gets very complicated really quick, I think.
It does.
And that's where, I don't know, you do see, you end up with these Twitter bites. I don't know if you noticed, I think it was on Friday, Michael Woods and Heredia going back and forth. And
Alex, they're no longer simpatico. Wow. You know, I thought those kids would make it, Alex. I really did.
Well, they don't help the strength and conditioning coaches. They certainly don't help their cause by being.
Well, certain ones don't.
Yeah.
I think certain ones are on board, want to do the right thing, and would like transparency, and some don't.
I told this to Michael Woods. I want to say Cotto Martinez, that he had a reporter. I think it was Kelsey McCarson that seems to kind of champion Memo. And there was a little bit of, I don't know, maybe it was just because I've seemed so anti-Memo, they wanted to represent the other side, but whatever. But the longer we watch Memo Heredia on the timeline, the more you realize that he doesn't really answer questions. If you ask Victor Conte a question, or any of the number of other people I talk to in the industry, and Steve, you talk to the same people I do, they'll answer your questions. Memo seems to kind of make accusations and then kind of hide or disappear. He's never really seemed to be kind of on the up and up.
You know what the worst part is? He outright tells lies. That's the worst part about Memo, when he says stuff that VADA is not accredited by WADA. That is just a flat-out that's a lie. It's not true, and people get away with it because no one calls them on it except Victor and Gabe, basically. Alex. Alex, what was your other question?
I'll do you one better. This is actually kind of breaking news, Steve. I contacted USADA because I do have something of a relationship with them, and I asked them about – there was a Fight Hype interview where Heredia last week was claiming that he helped USADA and they test the NFL. He threw out some facts, and I threw them at USADA, and they answered back and said, no, USADA doesn't test the NFL, so that's not true. They have their own anti-doping program.
So Memo Heredia is not George Washington.
Yeah. There were a few other things that they knocked down. He said that he worked with them and, you know, worked on the WADA code, which I know Richard Pound, he worked on the WADA code. Memo Heredia did not. But they basically just said, no, I mean, during his trial with Trevor Graham, they took some notes with Memo. They did talk to him. But they didn't like – he's not a consultant for USADA, and they said as much. That's all some BS by Mr. Heredia.
Alex, your other question.
The other question is about this is an interesting month here, and traditionally this was always really cool when this kind of thing happened, where you'd have two fights on different weekends where you'd get two guys emerging in the same division that would sort of make a precursor to the next super fight in that division. And we kind of have that in the fact you have Garcia and Peterson and you have Provodnikov versus Matisse. But because of this whole Al Haymon intramural thing and how he really seems to be wanting to create, like, his own league, the fact that these guys are not – they're fighting at a catch weight and are sort of maintaining their title, you really don't have that. Is it wrong to think that just because we'll know who is better, in a sense, between Garcia and Peterson, that they're a potential opponent for Provodnikov, Matisse's winner, or no?
Because I think we have to look in the real world. I mean, there's going to be a PBC world, and there's going to be the HBO top-ranked Golden Boy, everybody else world. And I said this on another one of my platforms. We're getting more boxing. Not sure we're getting the best boxing. And to me, that is problematic. Alex, we got to get running, okay?
All right, thanks so much. Take care.
Please join us again. Here's a tweet from Robert Buffa before we hit the phone lines again. Khan wants to fight Algeri, a kickboxer with no power? Sounds like a guy who really wants to be considered the best.
Well,
Gabe?
Maybe Al should
it is
hire
what it is.
It is what it is. Maybe Al should hire Amir Khan to do some of their matchmaking because, you know, he certainly understands his own strengths and weaknesses. 702, you're live on the next round.
Ooh, there's fear and loathing in Las Vegas.
It really is. Right. They're out, let's see, 602, you're live on the next round. 602.
Ooh, we're falling
all
apart
right
here, Gabe.
It's terrible. We're coming down the stretch. 407, you're live on the next round.
Okay, hold on. We're going to take one more call here, and it's our man Amilcar at the 347-658. Let's punch him up, and we'll call it a day, Gabe.
All right, let me track him down. This is the people that are staying. 347. There he is. Boom. Amilcar.
What's good,
amigos?
How
you doing?
Amilcar, we are clearing the lane. It's all you.
Appreciate it. It makes up for the 2 weeks I spent on hold.
Yeah, Gabe.
Ouch.
Way to go, man.
I'm sorry.
It's all good. Anyhow, I had to get a blessing from the show before the end of the month, so I had to make it tonight.
What's on your mind?
Well, I was reading today about Audley Harrison, and I wanted to share that. I kind of see it as a sad story about a guy who did try to go it on his own without a promoter and without a manager, but who's ended up, you know, kind of bankrupt and brain damaged. And I mean, I'm a guy who's all for fighters taking control of their careers, but I think that there are cases where people really need to have people looking out for them, and I think this is one of them. I mean, how many times did this guy need to get knocked out in the first round before people said to him, look, you should not be fighting anymore, my dude? But, I mean, he kept going, and, you know.
But also, where were the commissions to say, we are pulling your license? I think this goes far beyond a managerial or promotional issue. And I've always said this, fighters and these fans who say, what do managers do? They're not worth it. You know what? Be quiet. You don't know anything.
What about
a good manager is worth their weight in gold. But as it relates to Harrison, I think there's a shared responsibility because the commissions, they kept licensing this guy.
Yeah, they did. And just as they've been licensing Jermaine Taylor, and, you know, these are just two kind of high-profile cases, but, I mean, dude's bankrupt and is saying that he's brain damaged. I mean, it begs the question, yeah, should fighters really be 100% going it alone? And I think that, as you were saying, Steve, people really need to be looking out for them.
Yeah.
So,
your thoughts on Gary Russell? Do we trust this guy? I've always been a believer, but as Ronald Reagan once said, trust but verify.
Well, the question is he going to be able to rematch Lomachenko and win? I don't think he's shown me anything in his last fight to say that that outcome would be any different. I think I heard that he was blaming it on dehydration or, you know, bad strength and conditioning or something along those lines. But, no, he's definitely a talent. He's got speed. He's got good footwork. But there are people out there in and around his division, whether it's Rigondo, who I think has called him out, or whether it's a rematch with Lomachenko, I think would just school him. Because, I mean, he did get schooled against Lomachenko.
Yeah, he looked more than just thirsty in that fight. I don't really understand. You know, I mean, I can understand trying to hang your hat on something, but I mean, you got to give Lomachenko some sort of credit. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't like he went in there against a style he was supposed to beat and was flat. Could really explain it. He was in there against one of the best fighters in the world and one of the best amateurs ever, and he got taken to school, like you said. But I think he's like any fighter at this point. It is kind of wait and see, but it's also all in the matchmaking.
Agreed. Let me ask you guys something. If you were in the New York area, would you go to the Barclays Center to support Peterson and Garcia, especially based on the last fight Garcia was in? Because I wouldn't. Like, I'm not going.
Really? Even if one iota said, hey, Amilcar, we have 10 seats for you and 9 of your best friends. We need a whole row filled on us. You don't go?
Is beer included?
Ooh, that's the issue. That might be the deal breaker, Amilcar. That might.
Because
you know what? What if they gave you vouchers for 2 beers?
I'm there.
I feel like Monty Hall. I'm making a deal here.
No, but seriously, I look at it almost as a form of political protest. Like, it was so bad, the last card that Danny Garcia was in at Barclays Center. I can't in good conscience say, here's more money. I just can't do it. You know, there has to be a consequence for what happened last time out.
Well, that's the wrong sport for that. But you're telling me Quillen Lee doesn't interest you one iota? And no play on words there. That doesn't interest you? That's a good fight.
Yeah, it is a good fight. It is a good fight. I'm torn, actually, because that is a good fight. But I'm just not happy with the Danny Garcia being reinvited to the Barclays. But no. In fact, I'm interested in hearing your takes on who you think is going to win that one, because I think it could go either way.
Well, tune in. We're definitely going to preview that. But
okay.
I will say this. I thought at 140, I thought Peterson was going to win that fight because I think Garcia has problems making 140, and that was borne out in the Mauricio Herrera struggle last March. I think at 143, it was engineered by the higher-ups who want Garcia to win that fight. That's my particular opinion.
Something Gabe and Steve about the catch weight. Is it way off to think that that's a way for them to avoid having to make kind of unification fights with champions who are outside of the PBC? They say, look, our weight classes don't even line up to the WBC, so there's no need for unification there.
But again, this is about, and as people have talked about, the brand, starting a new history, being autonomous from the rest of boxing. I think it has more to do with that.
Hmm. All right.
So anyway, Amilcar, listen, thank you for calling in.
Thank you as always. As I said, this show is one of the best parts of my week, so keep it going. Really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you very much, Amilcar.
Your words
are greatly appreciated. Gabe, we got to talk about this, and this is on me, because we didn't talk about it last week, and I didn't even, like, know about it until I was reminded of it from a top-ranked tweet, but how the mighty have fallen. Nonito Donaire, just 2-3 years ago, a pillar of HBO Sports, had basically a stay busy, get back, tune-up contest in the Philippines against a journeyman and he blew him out predictably. But I'll say this for Nonito. I actually saw remnants of abdominal muscles at the weigh-in. He seemed to be in much better shape, but it proves one thing, Gabe, and we've been saying it. He never belonged at 126.
He never did. I think the difference showed, you know, and yeah, I was, when I saw the weigh-in picks, I'd been getting used to seeing that fat roll and to him, you know, not looking like a pro fighter. It was kind of like, not everybody's super ripped. Not everybody's built like Bruce Lee.
Right.
But it was showing. And I remember heading into the Rigondeaux fight when I came to the gym and saw him, and it was just, he just seemed to be all over the place in terms of his preparation. And that's just never good for fighters. So hopefully, you know, the abs are returning along with the work ethic.
And I guess the reports are, I'm just reading on the internet, that he's already in training or is going to go right back to the gym because he's going to go back, I believe, to the show in Macau in July. So, you know, listen, when that bankroll gets a little bit low and you start looking at your second child and you're no longer making the money you were, that will motivate a fighter. Anyway, we'd like to thank everyone that made this show possible, first and foremost, the fans, and then Iron Gym, our new sponsor. Again, Iron Gym, you can call that number at 818-322-4627. That address, 14548 Ventura Boulevard, Sherman Oaks, California. They have a special offer where the first week at the gym is free. So on behalf of Gabriel Montoya and the rest of the Leave It in the Ring radio network, till the next round, goodbye, everybody.